did all them favors. They never repaid me.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. We've got two shows left in the 2017 NBA Draft Recap Series. The NBA Draft Lottery is occurring today. We're deep in the midst of the conference finals. Well, one game per series anyway, with the Warriors going up 1-0 and the Celtics up 1-0. So lots of action happening. We're going to be covering off picks 39 to 49 in the 2017 NBA Draft today. And of course, then tomorrow we'll go 50 through to 60. And then we will start the season recap shows for all 30 NBA teams. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it indeed.
We have got lots of players to talk about in today's show, and we will start by looking at the 39th pick in the NBA draft, and that was Jawan Evans of the Los Angeles Clippers. Evans dealt with abdominal issues, hernia issues through the season, and that cost him big chunks of the end of his year. But prior to that, he'd put up quite a few decent performances, especially when the Clippers were down and had a lot of guard injury issues. Evans stepped up. He had a game where he played 40 minutes. He had another game where he played 39. He played 36 minutes. And overall, for the season, he played 48 games and 16 minutes per game. He was still only the 364th ranked player, averaging almost 5 points with 2 assists and 2 rebounds in those 16 minutes and 0.8 steals. And like so many of these guys, shot horribly, 35% from the field and 28% from 3 for a true shooting of 42%. But I guess the really encouraging thing here is the steal rate, 1.8 steals per 36 minutes. It's what made him look an attractive second-round prospect from a statistical translation point of view, is that steal rate. And steal rates are one of those things that do correlate decently well with players having successful NBA careers. He averaged 4.6 assists only per 36 minutes, so that's something that needs to improve. And of course, the shooting efficiency is well down for Evans. The Clippers point guard situation, we've got Austin Rivers who played minutes there. We've got Ty the List manager Wallace who played some minutes there and looked pretty solid. Who knows if he'll be back on this team next season. Patrick Beverley's got a return from knee injury. Milos Teodosic has got a return from injury. But none of those guys are rock-solid, star-level NBA starters. I'm not saying Evans is going to be that, because he won't be a star-level NBA starter, but he could very, very easily find himself in a consistent backup role. He is a few months off turning 22, so a little bit on the older side. But I thought he acquitted himself fairly well when he was given that opportunity. He had a few double-digit scoring games, including that one against the Wizards where he played 40 minutes, had 15-6-6 with 5 steals, backed it up a couple of weeks later against the Rockets for 15 with 4 assists, and had back-to-back double-digit scoring games against the Warriors and the Hawks of 12 and 13 points. And both of those lines look really sexy. 12-4-7 against the Warriors and 13-8-4 with 4 steals against the Hawks in 39 minutes. And then the injury started to set in, and he never was really the same after those abdominal problems struck him down. In terms of overall advanced numbers, nothing looks particularly spectacular. He held his own defensively with his defensive box score plus minus, but horrible shooting, horrible PER, negative win shares per 48, negative VORPs and box score plus minus. Nothing really to hang your hat on there, but that, as I said, that steal rate is a positive for Jawan. He also was a positive 1.4 on off in 778 minutes, so that's a great sign as a rookie point guard to be able to hold his own out there. And it does correlate a little bit with that defensive box score plus minus. So those things added in with an expected, I guess, significant growth in shooting percentage in his second season makes me think that he could find himself at least in that third point guard role. And depending on what the Clippers do in the offseason, they've got a lot of flexibility. What they do with Milos Teodosic's contract, Patrick Beverley, how he returns, there is an opportunity for Jawan to play perhaps not the 16 minutes per game he played this season, because a lot of that was injury related, but to have a consistent role and get 60 to 70 games in and show a little bit and improve that shooting. Because if you can become a reliable shooter, and obviously 28% from three is not reliable, if you can become that guy, then there is a role there for him with that ability to force those turnovers, and he can be an interesting creator. So I've got hope for Evans to become a decent enough backup, not really ever going to be a 30-minute-per-game guy, I don't believe, but I think in a 20-minute role, similar to an Ish Smith type of role in Detroit, which does have occasional fantasy value, but I think he can be more effective as a shooter. He's a better free-throw shooter, so that helps to extrapolate those shooting numbers out. You play 20 minutes per game, you get 1.3 steals, you get 4 or 5 assists, you score 10 points with 1.5 triples, and you shoot it at 42 or 43%. You know, I feel like that can lead you somewhere. He was a 45% shooter in college. He was a 41% three-point shooter in college. So all those things, you know, give you some level of hope there for Juwan Evans. So hopefully he can turn that around after this injury-plagued into his first season in the NBA. Let's go on to the next pick, and that's the 40th pick, and that is Dwayne the Baconator Bacon from the Charlotte Hornets. He was forced into action earlier than we anticipated with Nick Batum suffering that elbow injury, and actually started the first 3 games of his NBA career. Didn't really do a huge amount to get me excited this season. He was the 446th ranked player in his 13.5 minutes per game across 53 games. 3 points, 2 rebounds, 0.7 assists, piss poor shooting, 37 from the field, 26 from 3, 80 from the line for a true shooting of 43%. And even if you go look at his per 36 numbers, nothing really extrapolates all that well. 0.8 steals, 1.9 assists, 8.8 points, 0.6 triples. These are per 36 minute numbers. The 6.2 rebounds is not a bad number for a wing, but nothing really was, you know, grabbing me from Dwayne Bacon. There were a couple of solid-ish games. He had an 18-point performance against the Spurs with 7 rebounds, and it wasn't one of those games where he went 7 of 9 from the field. He actually took 15 shots and only hit 6 of them, but was able to get that large usage happening and showed a little bit in that sort of a performance. But after a strong start to the season where he had 3 double-digit scoring games in the first month of the year, he was barely able to get that back again. In fact, had just 2 more for the rest of the season, once against the Knicks in March and another one against the Grizzlies where he scored 15 points in both of those in extended roles. It's not a lot that, you know, he was solid enough, I guess. You know, nothing stands out really with any of his advanced numbers, but similarly to Juwan Evans, an almost neutral defensive box score plus minus, and wing defenders are super valuable, and that's something that can keep him around in the NBA. A plus 2.1 on off, a plus 1.9 net rating. These are all obviously positives for teams that need these sort of wing guys, but the shooting's got to come. A 5.8 PER is not going to cut it. A 43% true shooting is not going to cut it. Just really negative offensive stuff is really going to limit what the Baconator is able to do. And I don't ever project him as being any sort of guy that's going to take huge steps forward and become this excellent sort of player. Whereas with Evans, as we talked about before, I think he can take these steps forward. I'm not sure Bacon can. He's a few months off turning 23, so he's a full year older there. Nothing overly projected well in terms of his fantasy statistical stuff, apart from the rebound rate, which was relatively solid, but he doesn't look like he's ever going to be a strong fantasy guy. And if he ever had a top 200 season, I think I would be surprised. It's always a bonus to get, you know, out of the 40th player selected in the draft, to get starts out of a guy like that. He actually started 6 games to get passable defense, but you do need to be able to hit shots. He needs to be able to put those up. And when he was on the court, an offensive rating of 88 is just, it's not going to cut it. And that offensive ineptitude is really what's going to limit his overall playing time. But defense is interesting. New coach coming in, James Borrego, how they use him is going to be an interesting situation. The 41st pick in the NBA draft was Tyler Dorsey. He went to the Atlanta Hawks out of Oregon. He's just turned 22 years of age, and he played 56 games this season, 17 minutes per game, 7 points, 1.3 triples, a bit over 2 rebounds, 1.5 assists with 0.3 steals, 38 from the field, 71 from the line, but impressively, a 36% mark from 3-point land, including 43% over the final 13 games of the season, where he saw his usage rise to 22%. and he played 25 minutes per game. So that's an impressive number there to get that three-point shooting up. And over the course of the end of the season, when the Hawks were really tanking and Kent Bazemore was sitting down, Tyler Dorsey put up some strong games and lots of double-digit scoring performances. We can see over the end of the season here, a 19-point game against the Magic, 18-6-4 against the Heat, 15-5 against the Heat again, 22-3 against the Wizards, and that's four games in a row, and then ended the year with a 17-point performance against the Philadelphia 76ers. So he did show some stuff. One thing I was impressed with him was his ability to create some play. So assist rate of 3 per 36, while it's not fantastic for a wing, it's passable. He scored the ball well. He was able to improve his efficiency as the season went on a decent usage rate. So there are some positives here for Dorsey. And again, wing players, and he handled the ball a little bit as well, played more point guard than I expected him to. That's an obvious advantage to guys like this. If they can play a little bit at point guard and handle the ball, it gives them a bonus there as well. But defensively, he does have quite a bit to work on. His steals and blocks were pretty much non-existent, and the shot does have to get better. But I thought Dorsey showed enough that on a bad team, he can be a rotational piece. I don't ever think that he's really going to be a starter-level player. But he showed enough that for deeper leagues, for dynasty leagues, that he could, you know, maybe nudge the top 200, top 250 at times. A PER of 10 and a true shooting of 49%, they're okay numbers. His win shares were better than those other guys, but really poor defensive metrics, poor box score plus minus, a negative 3.5 on off, a negative 8.7 on court net rating. Obviously a lot to work on. Finish at the rim at a poor level, just 50% there, 19% on long twos, which again, he didn't take huge amounts of, thankfully, but still needs to hit those at a better rate as well. There is still some room for improvement here with Dorsey, playing more point guard, getting more of those assists. I think that can improve. He showed a little bit more there, but defensively is where the issue is, and he's got to keep that shot improving. But I think that he can stick as a rotation player for a couple of seasons at least, and that's, again, when we're talking about guys selected at this point in the draft, that's a pretty decent enough result to get that. The next guy we're going to look at is Thomas Bryant of the Los Angeles Lakers. Barely played for the big club, just 72 minutes in 15 games, 5 minutes per game, 1.5 points with 1 rebound, 0.4 assists and 0.1 blocks, 38 from the field, 56 from the line, 10% from 3, true shooting of 44%. Per 36ers of 11.5, 3 assists and a block, which, yeah, that looks not too bad. But of course, the Lakers, like we talked about with Josh the Hitman Hart yesterday, their team is such in flux. Does Brook Lopez return? Does Julius Randle return? Does a big man come in? What do they do in free agency? Bryant, if it's a Zubats, is still there. Where do they view Bryant? Clearly, they view him behind Zubats at this point, because down the stretch, Zubats was getting those minutes, Bryant wasn't. But if you talk to people who watch the Lakers and are big Lakers people and are watching them, the South Bay Lakers, now, Thomas Bryant put up some good numbers in the G League and played well. We'll talk about him in a second there. If we want to look at his advanced numbers, nothing really extrapolates out in those 72 minutes. A 10 PER, a poor true shooting, okay defensive box score plus minus, win shares, not too bad, but it's in such limited sample size that it's hard to take a huge amount out of that. But if we look at his G League numbers, where he played 37 games, he averaged almost 20 points per game with 7 rebounds, 2 assists and 1.5 blocks. He shot 36% from 3 and hit 1.8 triples per game, 60% overall from the field, for a true shooting of 68%, a PER of 23%, a usage rate of 22%, massive win shares per 48, monster box score plus minus numbers, really showed that he could work as a stretch five, taking those threes, being a relatively impactful defensive player as well. Again, Lakers fans and people watching the G League were really impressed with what Thomas Bryant was able to do. He was quite impressive. He made the all D-League team, or the all G-League team, the all G-League rookie team as well. You know, shot the ball very, very impressively for a big man, and showed levels of rim protection, which is encouraging too. Could he take the step ahead of Ivica Zubats? heading into next season, depends on what Brook Lopez is. Sure, he is only 20. There is lots of room for growth with Thomas Bryant. He is a guy that I would be buying in deep dynasty leagues. Again, I don't know what's happening with the Lakers. So many moving parts there, but I think he could very comfortably jump ahead of a Zubats next season. And does he have starting potential? Yeah, I think he does. He's never going to be a Joel Embiid, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, Karl Anthony Towns type of center. Very few are. But he can be a 24, 25, 26 minutes Jonas Valanciunas type center who can defend a little bit better and can stretch out and hit that three. So there is a bit to see there. I think we might even see a little bit of him playing at the four at times as well. It won't happen all that often. But I think we'll see that happen with Thomas Bryant. So I think that Lakers fans should be impressed with what they saw, not necessarily in his time with the Lakers, in his G League time. And we'll see if that's able to translate through to playing with the big team. The next player we're going to talk about is a guy that didn't play in the NBA at all this season, a second round pick of the Houston Rockets, and that's Isaiah Hartenstein, the German big man, 7 foot center. But Houston did bring him over and he played for their G League team, the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. He played 38 games there, almost 19 minutes per game, 9.5 points with 6.6 rebounds, half a steal, 1.1 blocks, shot 34% from three on one attempt per game, 57% from the field, a PER of 20, a true shooting of 63%, great win shares and box score plus minuses and VORPs. Good, really strong rebounding rate. And his strong rebounding rate is something he displayed in Europe as well. And it was one of the things that looked, when he statistically was translated, his numbers looked impressive. The efficiency stuff has improved from his time in Europe. So that's impressive. Hitting threes at a good rate from the longer line. Finishing well, overall from the field at 57%. They're all positive. Rim protection stuff. One block in 18 minutes a game is pretty good going as well. So the numbers there look really good for Hartenstein. Now, where does he fit in with this Rockets team? I would be stunned if Clint Capella goes somewhere else on this team. Ryan Anderson is useless at the moment. Nene is old. Tariq Black's very much a nobody. You've got Joe Chi in that mix there as well in the big man spot. PJ Tucker, Luke Marmute playing minutes at the four. So he is a long way off being a contributor type player. But that rim protection, the ability to stretch a little bit, there's a little bit of something there for Hartenstein. So he is someone that I expect to make the roster next season, depending on what they do. But he could also be parts of trades as Daryl Morey really rejigs things to try and open up space for other players or, you know, roster spots or as an asset. But his G League stuff was okay. It didn't blow anybody away, but I thought that he was solid enough, especially with his ability to rebound. That was a strength of Hartenstein's this season playing for Rio Grande Valley. The next player we talk about is a guy who saw a lot more time in the NBA. That's the 44th pick in the draft, and Damian Dotson of the New York Knicks. He played 44 games this season, 11 minutes per game, 4 points, half a 3, 2 rebounds, 0.7 assists, and shot the ball decently well. 45 from the field, 70 from the line, 32 from 3 for a true shooting of 53%. Now, he came into the league from the draft, drafted out of Houston as a knockdown 3-point shooter. It didn't really show up all that much, but again, it's hard to take full view of what happens at the end of the season, but in the last 4 games, he played 36, 30, 19, and 33 minutes. He hit 4, 1, 2, and 1 triples. He had a 30-point game against the Heat with 11 rebounds on 21 shots. And then he had 11, 3, and 2 with 3 steals against the Bucks, 11, 4, and 3 with 2 threes against the Cavs, and then 11, 10, and 2 with a 3 in 33 minutes in the season finale against Cleveland, shooting over 55% true shooting in all 4 of those games. So really did start to step it up late. I didn't like the way that Jeff Hornacek used him.
My name is Jeff.
I thought he should have been used a lot more than he was. His ability to space the floor, you know, getting him in some lineups there with Kristaps Porzingis. Just to see what he could do, especially when we're talking about, you know, in situations where Timmy Hardaway was injured, there was an opportunity for him to come in and play that Hardaway role. And he did make a couple of starts, and I thought he looked okay in those times that he was out there, but just didn't really play enough to be a... for to establish himself this season. as I said, solid true shooting, PER of almost 12. Yeah, win share stuff looked okay. The box score plus minus was a negative 3.1, which is not ideal, but it's far from horrible. On off of negative 0.7, that's a good start. Finished at the rim at about 60%, not a bad number for a guard. Didn't take that many shots there, but still 21% of his attempts came at the rim. He can dunk, he can get in there and finish at a decent enough rate. Defensively, he still does need some work, but he's not a complete disaster at this point. So I am interested to see, what Dotson can do with 1 year under his belt, with depending on what they do with Courtney Lee and new coaches and where they play Nilakina and Moutier and Trey Burke. There are other players there, but Dotson showed an ability to be a rotational guy. Now, he did also play 13 games for the Westchester Knicks, 36 minutes per game, and averaged 18 points and shot 39% from three. And that is more indicative of what he can be as a three-point shooter. 2.3 triples per game, 49% overall shooting, 56% on his twos, six rebounds, a steal per game. Very, very strong numbers. Those shooting numbers there in the G League. Didn't do much in other areas. The advanced numbers don't look as rosy for him in the G League as they do for someone like Tom Bryant or for Isaiah Hartenstein. Negative box score plus minus, below average win shares numbers, but still was able to shoot the ball well in that time and create reasonably efficient offense in his time playing for Westchester. So I think Dotson's got, I think he's got a chance to become a starter level player. I think he's got a chance to become a guy that plays 30 minutes per game, hits 12 points and 2 threes per game in the NBA, but doesn't do much in the other areas and doesn't get the assists, doesn't rack up steals. So the steals aren't bad. Not blocking shots, not pulling in big rebounds, not getting to the line a huge amount, but he can be, and we're seeing so many of these guys around being players who can be streaming options for that three-point category. So he's a name to watch in that regard. The next player, the 45th pick in the NBA draft in 2017, was Dylan Brooksy Brooks, and he played a ton of minutes in the NBA this season, almost 2,400 minutes, played 82 games and 29 minutes per game. He was the 207th ranked player for the season, started off with a bang and finished the season with a bang as well. And over his last 27 games, he averaged 15 points per game and was the 170th ranked player. He was able to up his usage significantly as the season wound down. His steal rate was impressive. He also was able to handle the ball more as the Grizzlies went into complete tank mode and got his assist numbers up, hit his threes. And those last 27 games, 15 points, 3 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 1.5 threes, 1.1 steals on 43, 77, and 33%. For the year, he had good shooting numbers, 44 and 75, 53 true shooting, 18 usage. But the season was really bookended by that really strong start in his first game where he had 19 and 5 with 4 steals and 2 blocks, and then had some poor stretches. And then when we get to January, started getting it back going with some decent scoring numbers and really kept that scoring going for the majority of the season. And steals. He had steals in each of the last 6 games and 9 of his last 10 games. He had steals with multiple steals in many of those games. The steal rate's still not quite that good. 0.9 steals needs work, but I was impressed with his ability to get those later in the season, to improve his assist numbers, and to improve his scoring on higher usage. In the last 27 games, he sported a usage of 24%. Now, of course, when Marc Gasol is healthy and playing his full minutes and trying, when Mike Conley is back, when the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pick, whatever it is in the NBA draft comes in, it's unlikely that Dylan Brooks is going to be sporting a 24% usage rate and playing 30 minutes per game. But there's also the possibility that Tyreke Evans doesn't return, so there's minutes there available for Brooks to take on. It's not like they have a plethora of young stud wings that they need to get minutes to. Marshawn Brooks showed some stuff late in the season, but who knows how much of a flash in the pan that is. I guess a fair chunk of it is flashy in the pan. But really impressive stuff from Brooks to end the season. 28 points in a game against Portland in April, 22 against Detroit on the 8th of April, 36 against the Thunder in the season finale with 7 rebounds and 2 steals. So really some impressive things that he was able to show, more than I expected that he was going to be able to do this season, no doubt about that. But overall, the advanced numbers, they don't really paint him in a positive light. PER of 9.8, win shares of 0.024. Negative box score plus minuses offensively and defensively for a negative 3.1 overall. Negative VORPs. There's no real standout number there, but a ton of minutes, a plus 3.5 with him on the court versus off the court. That's a huge thing for a rookie who played so many minutes. He's signed for two more seasons at decent prices. 1.4 next season and 1.6 the season after. And he will 100% be a rotation guy next year. And he is 22 years of age at this point and will turn 23 at some point next season. Not that that's overly old, but there's still some things that need to change. And Conley returning, a draft pick coming in, Gasol being back at full go for the whole season does cast a little bit of a pall on the shine that Brooks put up this season. He did only average the 11 points despite some strong stretches at times. That 15-point stretch to end the year was obviously very impressive. Will he be ever a top 100 player? I think I'd be surprised at that. Will he have a couple of years as a top 200 guy? Yeah, I think he will. And I think a top 200 spot for him next season could be something that happens, especially if he can keep his late season charge of being able to handle the ball up a little bit. But of course, that's going to be harder with Conley around and potentially a guy like Luka Doncic there. There's lots of things that can change with Memphis, with Brooks, with Andy Harrison, who played a key role down the stretch as well. But I wouldn't be hitching my wagon to Dylan Brooks to become some sort of star or top 100 or top 80 guy. But I was impressed with what he could do. He showed some stuff defensively and was able to ramp it up offensively when the time was there. So that's always a positive thing when players can do that. Pick 46 was Sterling Brown of the Milwaukee Bucks. And like many of my criticisms of Jason Kidd and then Joe Pronti, I did not think they used Sterlo enough. 57 games for 14 minutes, 4 points, 2.5 rebounds, 0.6 threes and 0.6 steals with 41% field goal percentage, 88% from the line and 35% from three for a true shooting of 51%. Per 36 numbers, the thing that encourages me there is the 6.6 rebounds out of a wing, 1.5 steals per 36, 1.5 threes per 36, 0.6 blocks, and the shooting numbers were pretty good from Sterling Brown this season, but it just didn't feel like he got really huge opportunities to do what he did. I thought he was better than Tony Snell for pretty much the whole season and should have been in the rotation ahead of him. He had a nice little stretch in March of a 15, 11, and 10-point performances, strong on the boards as well, got some steals, was efficient, hit threes, and I think that's what Sterling Brown can do. I thought he was a steal at the time at that selection, a 6'5" wing who can shoot threes is a very important sort of player in today's NBA. And I thought he showed enough defensively. He's not going to be an elite defender, but he showed enough defensively to stay on the court. He showed enough with his ability to hit threes and take the correct shots that I think that we should see, and I don't know that we will, but we should see him ahead of a guy like Tony Snell next season playing a 16 to 17 minute per game role. Still only a PER of 9 and lowish true shooting, but win shares per 48 were all right. A solid defensive box score plus minus. Still has some work to do offensively. His creation stuff has a fair way to go. He didn't finish all that well at the rim. Shot a higher level from the 10 to 16 foot range, which is something that's likely to drop. He was at 53% there. That's something that's likely to drop, but he is a decent enough shooter. He shot, as I said, a good 36% from three, and he was a 45% three-point shooter across all four seasons in college. So he can hit the threes. He can provide some stuff defensively. And, I think that he's a guy that's going to find himself in an eighth man role, first or second wing off the bench sort of guy who, and on some teams could actually start. I was pretty impressed with Sterling Brown at times, and I thought that he was underused during the season by the couple of coaches that the Milwaukee Bucks employed. Pick 47 was Ike Anabogu of the Indiana Pacers, a guy whose stock fell dramatically due to concerns with his knee injury. He only played 11 games and 2.7 minutes per game, 30 minutes overall for the season. And there's just very little that we can grasp from the 1.2 points and 0.8 rebounds that he scored. 44% from the field and 0.3 blocks. The block rate's impressive. It translates out to 3.6 per 36 minutes. But we're talking, he did not even play 36 minutes for the entirety of the season. So that's a little bit hard to extrapolate. But he did come in with a reputation as a guy who can block some shots. Again, we can look at his advanced numbers at PR of 22, fantastic, but it's in such limited time that it really doesn't mean anything. Massively high win shares. But if we go to the G League and see what he was able to do there, well, for Fort Wayne, he played 20 games. He played 25 minutes per game. He averaged 8.7 and 6.4 points. He averaged 1.7 blocks, and that translates to 2.5 blocks per 36. So a fairly strong rate. 53% from the field, 70% from the line. I mean, they're relatively good numbers. A strong defensive presence he provided. 1.7 defensive box score plus minus, a PER of 14. I think there's enough there to say that he's can block shots. Could he be someone that can do anything offensively? I guess that's the concern. I don't think that he can. Can he stay healthy? That's also something that I really have my doubts that he will be able to do. Obviously, Miles Turner, Domantas Sabonis, comfortably ahead of him. I don't think we should really be expecting too much out of Anabogu. I am really worried about the knees, and I think that in the end will probably cut his NBA career fairly short, and that's going to limit what his fantasy value can be. But anyone who can come in and block 1.4, 1.5 shots in 17 minutes, if it ever comes to that, can be a valuable guy. He has still got two more years left on his contract, but both of those are non-guaranteed. Actually, next year's contract is guaranteed for $690,000 of the $1.4 million that he's owned. So half guaranteed for next season, and then 1.6 is unguarded for the following season. So I don't have huge hope for Anabogu, mainly knee injury related, but also just a lack of ability on offense and a little bit of slowness in moving the feet. The next guy we're going to talk about is someone who, again, translated very, very well coming into the draft, and that's Sindarius Thornwell, the 48th pick by the Clippers. Now, this guy is a bit older. He's 23 years of age, but he had a fairly strong run this year. 73 games played, 16 minutes per game, 4 points and 2 rebounds with 0.9 assists and 0.6 steals and an impressive 0.4 blocks. 43 from the field, 38 from 3, 67 from the line, true shooting of 52%. And the most impressive thing there is his steal rate and that block rate as a guy who was playing a point guard and shooting guard quite a bit, 0.8 blocks per 36 minutes. He was a 375th ranked player overall this season. But when speaking with Juwan Evans, lots of injuries. Rivers was out, Tad Osich was out, Pat Beverly was out. And where does he fit into this rotation? Defensively, I thought he was able to hold up at times. Offensively, he was a worry, a PER of 8. The shooting didn't really come. And he was a guy that in college, he did shoot the ball well in his last season, 39% from 3. But the year before that, as a junior, just 33% from deep. So still does have some work to go there. There's no real standout numbers in his defensive or his advanced numbers, apart from that block percentage, which is relatively impressive. Could not finish at the rim, really struggled there, and that's something he's going to need to work on. An on-off of negative 2.4 as well is not something that's overly impressive for Thornwell. You're talking deeper dynasty league, sure. Look, he can have some value. He showed that he can stick in the NBA, but will he ever be a top 200 or top 150 player? Probably not. I just didn't see enough spark from him this season to make me think that. But again, the defensive abilities, the fact that he played as many games as he did and as many minutes as he did this season is a positive to get out of that selection. I'm just not sure there's really huge amounts more coming from Sindarius Thornwell. The last player we're going to talk about today, the 49th pick in the draft, was an international player, Vlatko Kanchar of the Denver Nuggets. He remained in Europe this season, played for a couple of different teams, for Mega BMAX, which you also may remember as Mega Lex, and also for San Pablo in Mobiliaria Burgos in the Spanish League. Overall in Europe, he played 34 games this season, 25 minutes per game, and averaged 11 points with 0.9 steals, 0.4 blocks, 4.5 rebounds and 1.3 assists. Really middling sort of numbers, nothing overly spectacular, but a 38% three-point shooter, 45% from the field, 84% from the line. This is a guy, if you don't know who he is, he's a 6'8 wing, a small forward. So got decent size, decent ability to shoot, and those things are clearly going to work in his favor when we're working here, whether he comes over and what sort of impact he's going to have. The Nuggets' biggest hole in their team, is it small forward? Does Will Barton remain around? The Farton one. Does Baby Neck Wilson Chandler stick around? Probably not. Like, there is an opportunity there, but I'm not thinking that Kanchar is going to come across and immediately fill that role. He was, about even in terms of his net rating this season, a PER of 14, a true shooting of 57%. Everything about him just feels sort of neutral, sort of right in the middle of where it needs to be. And he can be a rotational guy, but I don't really think star is happening for him and not becoming a really strong sort of player. I think there are other guys like Euros picked after him that I prefer. Sasha Vezenkov on the Brooklyn Nets, I think, has got more of a chance to be an impactful NBA player than Vlatko Kanchar. But he is a guy that could come over and could play a role, I guess, for this Nuggets team. I'm not expecting him this season, but someone who played well, did what he needed to do in Europe this season, but not someone who really, he projects as a worse Wilson Chandler, basically average in every sort of category. That's where we're looking at Kanchar, and not someone who I ever expect to have top 200 seasons in the NBA. That wraps it up for today's show. We're going to be looking at picks 50 through 60 in tomorrow's program, so make sure you're staying tuned for that. Subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Warriors and Locked On Rockets for their reactions to Game 1, and Locked On Celtics and Locked On Cavs for their reactions to Game 2, and right across the network as the NBA Draft Lottery results come down. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Andrew Harrison.